During the 1980s, the word postmodern was so overused by writers to mean any stylish work of art or culture that had a kind of winking self-consciousness that we all got sick of it and stopped using it. But even though the word went away, the postmodern sensibility, hip, jokey self-consciousness, has remained ubiquitous in art and music and film. Just look at the names of things. A few years ago, Dave Eggers published his funny, sad, novelish memoir, A Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius. The book really was heartbreaking and brilliant, but Eggers was having fun. He turned an over-the-top promotional blurb into a title that was packed with a kind of self-mocking, half-serious pseudo-boastfulness. Now, the author Jinsey Willette is about to out Eggers Eggers. Her forthcoming sad, funny, and memoirish novel is called The Winner of the National Book Award. Postmodern movie titles take the opposite tack. They are willfully generic.
Hello.
As
Wanna
in Scary
fun?
Movie, the Who's spoof this? Of horror films.
Do you like scary movies?
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite?
I don't know.
Think.
Oh, I know. Kazam, you know, the one where Shaq plays a genie?
That's not a horror movie.
Well, you haven't seen Shaq act.
Or Spike Jonze's fictionalized adaptation of the nonfiction book The Orchid Thief, which was called simply Adaptation.
So tell me your thoughts on this crazy little project of ours.
First, I think it's a great book. I just don't want to ruin it by making it a Hollywood thing, you know, like an orchid heist movie or changing the orchids into poppies and turning it into a movie about drug running, you know?
In pop music, postmodern naming takes the form of homage, or maybe they're pseudo-homages. It's hard to tell. In the 1970s, an English singer named Declan McManus invented a stage name consisting of his mother's maiden name and the given name of an American pop music icon. Thus, Elvis Costello. And in the 1990s, a guy in Ohio named Brian Warner decided one good way to appeal to teenagers who want to freak out their parents would be to adopt the first name of a female pop icon and the surname of the most famous mass murderer of the age. Voila, Marilyn Manson. But right now, I've noticed, a new kind of jokey, media-obsessed band-naming protocol is on the rise. It's the appropriation by alternative bands of not-all-that-celebrated celebrities' names. Like the British band The Real Tuesday Weld, named after the 59-year-old actress whose career peaked back in the 1960s.
It's rain, it's rain, it's pouring, but I ain't complaining.
And the Gina Rowlands Band, named after the 68-year-old blonde actress whose best-known roles were in the 1970s. The Gina Rowlands Band, incidentally, pursues this particular obsession all the way. Among their recordings are the song Garofalo C'est Moi, an ode to the comedian Janine Garofalo.
I finally found what love is only in the movies.
And believe it or not, there's yet another band named after a different semi-well-known Gina. The Brooklyn band Gina Colada took its name from the byline of the New York Times science reporter, Gina Colada. According to the band's drummer, we like the sound of it, its rhythm. In other words, the choice was not quite random, but almost, which is meant to signify a kind of arch intelligence. Which is, moreover, the point of all these titles and names. Here's how it works. For starters, it's a little naughty to take a living stranger's name for the name of your band. And naughty is alternative. And if you take an arcane celebrity's name, it flatters your fans. They have to be with it enough to get the reference. That's even more alternative. Finally, these kinds of band names also have a certain slackery fatalism built in. Choosing a goofy novelty name like the Gina Rowlands Band means the group is practically embracing the fact out front that it probably won't make it big and doesn't really care. Which I actually think is kind of cool. in a postmodern way. This is Kurt Anderson in Studio 360.